Welcome to Chew Views with Richard Chew. Get ready to dive into a world of insightful conversations and thought-provoking discussions.
As progressives, our job is to have an all-inclusive, full-on assault with all of our players.
A show that focuses on moving our political, social, economic, gender, and cultural conversation forward.
And all of our players means all of our players.
It's Chew Views. And now, here's your host, Richard Chew.
Hey, progressives, welcome back to the second hour of Choose Use here on Monday, May 19th, 2025. Thanks for being with us this morning. Hope everyone is doing well, staying safe. And if you're getting out and about, that you went back to the closet and grabbed a windbreaker. I always like saying that, Devin, windbreaker or a jacket or a pullover. You know, windbreakers are like a thing from the past. So nobody really says that next time. I've got my jacket. I've got my whatever, you know, pullover, blah, blah, blah. We talked about President Biden and the diagnosis with prostate cancer and what that means to his, to him and his family and to the nation, frankly, the world, because of his service. Cancer is something that we have one degree of separation with that. We know someone in our family or our friends, our business colleagues that have been diagnosed with some form of. Ovarian cancer is a area that is a significantly large area of cancer for women. And with us this morning is the president and CEO of the Ovarian Cancer Research Alliance, Audra Moran. Good morning, Audra. If I may call you Audra, good morning. And welcome to Choose Views.
Good morning. Hi, how are you? And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm honored to have you with us this morning. I know that you have been very, very busy these past few years, and particularly when it comes to the work that you do, when it comes to fundraising, when it comes to corporate sponsorship and all that. But more importantly, awareness. That is the word. When we have the word, when we say the big C in terms of cancer, the big A is awareness. And the other one would probably be screening. But if you could, and again, thank you so much for being with us. And I can already tell you, we're going to ask you now to have you back, because this is a conversation that I think we need to continue to highlight in our current climate. But if you could, Audra, take a moment and tell us a little bit about your background and tell us a little bit more about OCRA, the Ovarian Cancer Research Alliance.
Absolutely. Well, Ovarian Cancer Research Alliance is the largest organization in the world fighting ovarian cancer, as well as other gynecologic cancers. And, you know, ovarian, unfortunately, there is no early detection test for ovarian cancer. So, you know, we really focus on, like you talked about, awareness. That's so important, because we focus on prevention. We talk about knowing your risk and your family history. There are some genetic tests that you can do. So this is the kind of work we do, but we also fund science, and that's really how we're going to solve this problem, obviously. I mean, any cancer. And we're right now, you know, we've committed up to, over the years, $128 million to scientists around the world who are fighting ovarian cancer. And we've helped raise $3.8 billion in federal funds for that. And, you know, we just think it's so important. That's the only way this problem is going to go away. Ovarian cancer is the fifth leading cancer cause in women, and it's the deadliest of the gynecologic cancers. So we really need a change here. We really need to make something happen.
So let me ask you this question. You said there's no early detection. And one of the things that I was talking about earlier with President Biden is screening. And I said, you know, yep, said to everybody, go to the doctor. We know that and I know you're a big advocate of this, and everything that I've read and followed on you is get to the doctor, y'all. Get out there, go see the physician. And we know that we all are prone to not getting the bad news, but we have to. It's one of my listeners sent a text in that the test is less expensive than the actual condition. But why is there no early detection when it comes to ovarian cancer, or at least to the extent that we know it?
It's really been a really tough nut to crack. You know, ovarian cancer is not one cancer. It's actually very heterogeneous. There's a lot of different types of ovarian. And what they've found in recent years is it really actually starts in the fallopian tubes, or at least most of it. So it's very internal, very hard to detect. And symptoms don't usually start until it spreads. And obviously, that's why the outcomes are worse. And that's why screening is just so difficult. There was actually a really large screening test where they were able to detect the cancer earlier, and they were able to do it at a stage shift, essentially, and it didn't impact mortality rates. And that's just really unacceptable. We need something that's probably going to detect it at least 5 years before symptoms even present. And that's tough, you know, and that's a tough message. But, you know, in terms of going to your doctor, you're right. If you're experiencing anything that's abnormal, and you know, in ovarian, the symptoms are so vague, and there's symptoms that a lot of women have, you know, frequent urination, bloating, feeling full quickly. I mean, talk to your doctor, absolutely. But another thing that's important is to talk about family history. And have you had a history of cancer, and not just ovarian? I mean, it can be on the, you know, the male or female side. So have you had prostate cancer in your family? Have you had breast cancer? Endometrial cancer, pancreatic cancer, those are all questions that you can have with your doctor now. You know, just thinking about that. Not everyone knows their history, you know, and sometimes that's a conversation to have at the holiday. It's not a real fun one, but you know, I think about, like, my grandmother passed away from cancer. I'm not exactly sure what kind. No one seems to remember. I mean, it's just, you know, those kinds of things. We hear that a lot. So those are the conversations you can have with your doctor, but screening is really difficult. And so we think we need a detection method that doesn't exist yet, or if it does, in a form that we don't know it.
Yeah, and that's the part that I think everyone gets very concerned about, is that, you know, we talk about screening, but in this particular case, that's not there. What are there, in terms of prevention measures? And maybe that's just, again, what you said about family history and knowing, but is there any more information that you guys are putting together, pulling together, researching on in terms of prevention?
Yes, absolutely. So that's kind of been our focus these last few years. We feel like, you know, if we're not able to give people something right now in terms of symptoms or do this or do that, here are some things you can do. One is knowing your family history. Genetic testing is also, if you have any of those, you know, cancers in your family, you can get genetic testing, or you can get genetic testing anyway. But your doctor, you know, talk to them about that. We offer a free genetic testing program on our website if you qualify. It's just a short little quiz that, you know, asks you a few questions, and then you can get a full service free genetic test. So genes like BRCA1 and BRCA2, you probably heard of, and those are the types of genes that can confer risk. So that's important to know. There are surgeries that you can do, or, you know, prospectively, if you know you have those genes. The other thing is something called opportunistic self-injectomy. It's a big word, but it just means that if you're going in for another pelvic surgery, like if you're having your tubes tied, a tubal ligation, don't have them tied, have them taken out. Because they've learned that the fallopian tubes, actually, if you're beyond your childbearing years and aren't planning to have children, then you can take your fallopian tubes out, and that's going to decrease your risk greatly. And there are other pelvic surgeries as well. So that's just a conversation to have with your doctor. And so those are two of the things that we've been talking to people about a lot: genetic testing and opportunistic self-injectomy.
Okay. Yeah, that is a big word. But it's repeat that again a little bit slower so that folks can hear that one.
So opportunistic self-injectomy, and the opportunistic part is just saying if you're having another surgery. We're not suggesting that, you know, average woman just walk in and say, I'd like my fallopian tubes taken out, if you don't have risk for, you know, the disease. But if you're already having another surgery, and there are surgeries beyond the tubal ligation, you know, you could be having some other type of pelvic surgery, they can take your tubes out. And it's really a very quick procedure and doesn't add much to the recovery time. I mean, it's really a fairly easy thing to do. And then it doesn't start. And if we can prevent it from starting, that's better than ever having it.
Yeah, but that's prevention. Yeah. If screening is not readily available or been determinative yet, then having the ability for prevention is critically important. Let me ask you another question. Sure. This is a global concern, and the organization has reached all over the world to spread the word and to provide the resources for women in this space. Is there, and this is kind of a two-part question, is there a place in the country, I'm sorry, in the world, where there's a higher incident rate? And then second to that is, in the United States of America, are there any geographical concerns or not concerns, but any geographical data is the word I'm looking for to talk about this in a more preventative way?
Well, there are definitely equity issues. And so anywhere you find that the care is not going to be as good as perhaps an urban city, for example, we definitely see an increase in rates. And that's concerning because the type of doctor that you should see is a gynecologic oncologist. And it's been proven that women have better outcomes if they see a gynecologic oncologist. Unfortunately, in the United States, there are less than 2,000 gynecologic oncologists. So there's not going to be one in every town. And not everyone can travel. And that's the same around the world, of course. I mean, there's going to be countries that might not have a gynecologic oncologist. So that's a major concern and a huge equity issue and something that we work every day to try to combat. We're always trying to, you know, incentivize younger researchers to come into the field and younger clinicians to come into the field. So it is a problem. And there definitely are, and you know, it's, as I said, the fifth leading cause of cancer death worldwide. There's about 325,000 cases, but that's not dispersed evenly, as you point out.
We're talking with Audra Moran, the president and CEO of the Ovarian Cancer Research Alliance. And we, again, thank you so much for being with us this morning. We talked about geography.
My pleasure.
You know, absolutely. Sorry about that. We talked about geography. We talked about the economics of this. Where does age come into your research, into your work as it relates to awareness and then, of course, the diagnosis that comes with this condition? Where is age play in this?
Well, it's typically diagnosed in women, postmenopausal women. So around age 63 is the average age, but it's not across the board. You know, as I mentioned earlier, it's a very heterogeneous disease. So some young women get it, but it's a different type of ovarian cancer. And so the majority is in postmenopausal women.
Okay. And so that goes back to what you were saying earlier about if you have any historical or any medical history in your family, that you you go in and you go through the process of the testing.
Absolutely. Like in BRCA, typically that's in younger women, and that's right. So you may have, a woman with a BRCA gene could have risk on either side of her family. So it's not just the mother's side, it's also the father's. And so if any of those cancers I mentioned are, you know, in your family history, that's something to talk to your doctor about.
And that's why it's important to have those conversations. I get it better now because, you know, a daughter could have a grandmother on her paternal side that had this that had a condition like this, that had ovarian cancer. Let me just call it as what it is.
And my grandfather with pancreatic cancer or prostate cancer. Yes, absolutely. It's a kind of cluster that it could be in either side.
So it doesn't just go straight line down mom's side. We want to make sure that we're talking about that, having that conversation for any of our lineage. Got it. Okay. I just wanted to be clear on that. So this is not a partisan issue politically or socially. And frankly, economically, this is one of those things that you know, strikes any one of us at any given time. But we know right now that there's a partisan conversation around funding from the federal government when it comes to medical or healthcare. We just saw that the Republicans in Congress blocked this latest bill, not because it made cuts, but that the cuts weren't deep enough when it comes to Medicare and Medicaid. So my long-winded question is going somewhere, and that is you're probably reading between the lines. How are you, if you are being impacted by any of the potential federal legislation that could impact the work that you guys do?
Well, we're fortunate to be, we're the only ovarian cancer organization with an office in Washington, D.C., and we do advocacy there. So I wish there were others, and there certainly are other groups that help and do other things, but we're on the ground every day, talking obviously to everyone about any potential cuts, because that's obviously going to impact, you know, future research. And we feel very strongly that, you know, we serve the whole country and the whole world, really, in terms of ovarian cancer, and we don't discriminate along party lines. So we just want the most money for funding that we can possibly get. So we're there every day and we're advocating for that. We joined several coalitions recently in terms of the funding cuts and, you know, really trying to push for the fiscal year 2025 budget will be coming up soon. So we're really hopeful that we can restore some of the cuts. This is what we do, and we believe in it. We do a lot of action alerts where we ask our constituents to write to their congresspeople, their senators. And so we've done a lot of those recently. And, we've seen a huge increase this year in the applications that we receive. I mean, last year we received the most applications ever, which was about 200. And this year we've received 350. So we know that there's a need. And while we would love to be able to fill that need, we just can't. We give about, $8 to $9 million a year. So we're obviously advocating to definitely maintain anything. And we're always pushing to grow it. So we definitely want to maintain the federal funding that we already have.
Yeah. So to that end, who have been, and I guess it's fair to ask this question without putting you on the spot. I don't mean to do that. But there are allies, I'm sure, that you have in Washington, particularly as it relates to Congress, the House of Representatives and senators. Are there advocates that are there? Are there allies that are there behind the work that you're doing in support of the work and the funding that's additional funding that's required to continue the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. We've been very fortunate to have bipartisan support for the very reason that you and I talked about. Ovarian cancer doesn't discriminate among parties. And so we've definitely had bipartisan support. We have someone that we work with for a long time who's actually an ovarian cancer survivor herself, Representative Rosa DeLauro. Mm-hmm. And she's wonderful. And, there's many wonderful people, but she just happens to be a survivor and so kind of has a unique perspective and often, helps us when we need a letter or whatever. And then we can almost always find someone to work with, on both sides. So that's important. Because again, we're not here to alienate anybody. We're not here to take sides. We're really just here to cure this disease.
Right. You've also You've also been very integral in the patient registry. If I read that correctly, tell us a little bit more about that. Is it a federal a data network? Help us put a little bit more light on those two areas.
And I'm fascinated by this topic. I'm sure that your listeners probably aren't as fascinated as I am. But yes, one of the things, so I won't geek out on you too much, but one of the issues is that, and this happens in so many disease states, there'll be a patient registry is so important. That's got patient reported outcomes in it. It's got, bio data. It's got blood work. It's got everything. Electronic medical records are amazing now, and you can have all the data in the world at your fingertips. The problem is that much of this data is siloed. And it's at, the individual institutions, and it's not shared. And that's not helpful, and especially with the advent of AI. AI needs big data. It needs large data sets. And so for the past year and a half, we have been on a crusade, I would call it, to create a patient registry that will unify all that data. And there's two parts to it. And again, I won't geek out on it and tell you the two parts. But basically, we're going to be asking patients to give us their information and to upload it themselves, which is empowering, I think, in its own. So many people that are diagnosed with this disease feel disempowered, disenfranchised, because you might not meet another person with ovarian cancer in your town. I mean, it is a rare cancer. Despite most people know somebody with ovarian, right? But so we feel like giving people something to do, this is something you can do. You can help science. You can help yourself. You can help the future generation by giving us your data. And we're going to connect researchers around the world where they have kind of a storefront, mm-hmm. essentially, where they can share what they have. So that way there's a lot of data issues and institutions can't always share. But what you can do is put up a list of what you have. And I'm making this very simple, but that's the other piece of it. So there'll be a registry for patients, and then there will be data that scientists can look at to see, this person in Spain has, this data, and this person in the UK has this data. And then they can partner and collaborate, because that's really how we're going to cure this.
Yeah, sharing information. I know right now a lot of people are a little bit concerned about sharing information with the federal government as it relates to, the infamous conversation around DOGE. But when it comes to healthcare in this space, with an organization like yours, I think it's definitely something that we have to be mindful of. And AI is kind of really revolutionizing some of the diagnosis. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen advances in so many other disease states already. I mean, breast cancer many cancers have, but sometimes it's about imaging and being able to look at imaging issues, imaging and see that millions of pieces of data. An AI can do that, whereas a human eye can't necessarily. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to aggregate as much ovarian cancer data as we can. We've been partnering with Microsoft for several years on our own, and they have an AI for Good lab, and they're just amazing. And what they do is we give the money to the researchers, and they offer what they call their compute power, which is, you know, beyond my capability to explain to you, but it's, you know, called Azure credits. And it's essentially what you need to conduct large AI, you know, experiments. And so we've recently partnered with them on a very large international grant called an AI Accelerator Grant with three other sister organizations from around the world. And we just launched this about a week and a half ago on World Ovarian Cancer Day. So we're going to offer $1 million, and then Microsoft will do an in-kind donation of $1 million in compute dollars. And so we're really excited about this because we're going to bring researchers from around the world together, try to give them, you know, a good amount of money and see what happens.
Well, I can hear a level of excitement and enthusiasm in your voice about the work that you're doing and where we're headed with this, because it is something that touches us all. It's a nonpartisan issue. So last couple of questions. And I'll give them to you, and then you can. One of them is how people can find you, how people can potentially get involved, how they can potentially contribute whatever resources they may have to the overall effort is one. The other thing I'm curious about is, with that enthusiasm, what keeps you going, Audra?
Okay, all good questions. So obviously people can find us by just going to our website at ocrahope.org. And, you know, money is always appreciated, donations. We are a private organization. We receive no federal funding. You know, we raise all of our money that we give out. And so that's always a huge way to help. But obviously, if you're a survivor and you want to get involved, there's a lot of ways. We have a peer mentoring program so that you can mentor someone else, or you can have a mentor yourself. We have a program called Survivors Teaching Students, where we train survivors to go into medical schools and talk to medical schools about a disease that they may never even see. You know, because again, being a rare cancer, not every doctor's going to see this case, and we want them to recognize, you know, it immediately when someone talks about it. So those are a couple of ways. You can go and check out our genetic testing if you're concerned, you know, and there's a lot of information on our site as well. But, you know, what keeps us going is really just we've seen so much progress in the last several years, and we can't lose that. We can't lose that momentum. And you know, despite all that progress, it's still a 51% survival rate, you know, 5 years out if you've been diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and that's just not okay. And so that's what keeps us going, is that we need to impact that. We need to change that, and it's going to take big change. So we're ready. We're gearing up.
Absolutely. Well, I want to have you back to talk about this again and talk about the work that you're doing, and to be a resource for you to continue to promote this message to anyone and everyone that can hear it. So we'll say that to you now, with the hopes that you'll come back in the future and we talk more about the work that you're doing at the Ovarian Cancer Research Alliance. President and CEO Audra Moran, thank you so much for being with us this morning. Have a fantastic day and keep up the very, very great work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much.
Appreciate you. Have a great day. We'll talk soon. Bye now.
Yes. Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah, guys, I mean that not gender-based, but us folks, progressives and non-progressives, this is a concern and a condition that needs our support. But the biggest support tool that we can provide, based on what Audra said, is just having those conversations, talking with family members and the like. Let's take a quick break, guys. The number is 773-763-9278. That's our Credo mobile and text line. We'll be right back.